Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power and shine a light forward on the path ahead of us to where evolution is taking us. So, this is a very special week. We're commemorating the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King. Reverend King is well-loved and he's well-celebrated. Many streets, avenues, boulevards, buildings have been named after him. And my cynical side would say that's because he's no longer around to uncloak our shadow and to poke us around the edges that make us uncomfortable. In other words, he's safe now. He wasn't safe 50 years ago. He was dangerous. Civil rights is one thing. He began speaking against the military-industrial complex and the Vietnam War. Plus, he had plans to bring thousands and maybe millions of poor people to camp in Washington, D.C. They were calling it Resurrection City. And the powers that be in power feared it would become Insurrection City, and so they had him killed. Our guest today, William Pepper, is an attorney who knew Martin King in the last year of his life, and subsequently proved in court that James Earl Ray, the purported murderer, was innocent and our own government guilty. Now, the first two segments this week will be a replay of the interview I did with Bill Pepper 1 year ago. The third segment will be about where we go from here. How do we use Reverend King's legacy to empower ourselves and one another, to heal the perpetration and move forward together? I say it in the interview. The truth shall upset you free. May we learn, may we have truth and reconciliation, forgiveness and rededication, and may we collectively embody the vision, the work, and the spirit of Martin Luther King. And now, the interview from April 4th, 2017. My guest today, William Pepper, has spent much of the past 49 years seeking to shed light on this dark moment. He was a friend of Dr. Martin Luther King. He is a human rights lawyer, and he represented Dr. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, and James Earl Ray in a civil case in 1999 and managed to convince the jury that the convicted killer, James Earl Ray, was framed and the assassination was a much bigger and more important and more nefarious plot. He's already written two books about his investigations and the subsequent trial, and he just published his third book, The Plot to Kill King, that reveals new details about the murder, the plot, and how and why James Earl Ray became the patsy. Welcome, Bill Pepper.
Yes, hello.
Okay, glad you're here. Glad you're with us. We're gonna jump right in. You've been maintaining that James Earl Ray was innocent. Who killed King, and how did they get away with it?
Well, the long and the short of it is that the government of the United States, agencies of the United States, killed Martin King. The key agency in the development of the assassination, the plot of the assassination, was the FBI under Hoover. He used Clyde Tolson, his number two, to be the go-between with the Dixie Mafia group in Memphis as they organized the assassination of Martin King. And they got away with it because they controlled all aspects of the investigation and had set James up as a patsy. They arranged his escape from prison and used him and developed him throughout the year 1967 and 68 for that purpose. So, I mean, that's a brief summary of what happened. I go through the details of that in considerable detail in the book. So, that's the summary.
Good. Well, we got the summary. That's excellent. I'm curious as to how this came about. How did you become involved with it, and how did you come to find this out? And then you can tell us a little more about how you presented it in a court of law and had the jury decide that indeed it was this conspiracy and not James Earl Ray.
Well, over a period of the many years in which I was involved in the case, witnesses came forward often close to the time when they were near their deathbeds, and revealed information that they knew and had held for a long period of time. I detail all of this in the third book, The Plot to Kill King, and I not only detail it, but I set forth the depositions, the sworn testimonies that we took. By the time of the trial in 99, we were three-quarters of the way there. 17 years later, we had the complete picture with all of the story that emerged.
Tell us about the case in 1999. Where was the court? How was it presented? I take it was a civil case, obviously, not a criminal case. Where was the court? How was it presented? And how and when did the jury decide?
It was presented in Memphis, Tennessee, in Shelby County Circuit Court, which was a civil proceeding. And we sued one of the perpetrators, Lloyd Jowers, and we sued Jowers for the purpose of allowing the proceeding to go forward and allowing us to put on all of the evidence that we had at that point in time. It took the jury after 70 witnesses and 30 days of testimony. It took the jury 59 minutes to decide that James Earl Ray was an unwitting patsy, and that the main perpetrators of the crime were the government of the United States and various individuals related to the state of Tennessee and the Memphis Police Department.
So I'm going to ask the rhetorical question, which is, why doesn't anybody know about this? What happened after that? I'm sure that, I mean, that's like, obviously would have to be one of the biggest stories any paper could cover. Any news service could cover. Was there any coverage when this trial was done?
No, the media, the corporate media in America is totally blocked in terms of this. A case as sensitive and information as sensitive as this, so the corporate media was totally blocked and did not cover it. They might have been present in the courtroom when Coretta testified, or any of the children, or Andy Young, but they were out of the courtroom deliberately when the critical evidence was being heard. So that is that's really what happened. And now the corporate media has suppressed this story, continues to suppress it. The progressive media, for the most part, is not much better, and that's what's really disappointing. That you don't have, thank goodness for people like you and your program that can air this stuff. But for the most part, this story is going to be buried and suppressed for as long as they can do that.
You know, it's interesting that the phrase conspiracy theory is used to slander a lot of these ideas that are outside the mainstream, and yet you have, did you say, 70 depositions? I mean, this is not like speculation.
No. There's no speculation here. And starting in 64, the CIA started to float this idea of conspiracy theorists and attach it to anyone that threatened to question the assassinations of John Kennedy or Malcolm X and, of course, Martin King. And that's what they do. And they and their representatives in the media are very adept at putting this forward. But it enables them not to deal with any of the real facts that come through. If you read The Plot to Kill King, you will see the details, the factual details of the assassination and how it was worked up, how it was developed, how Clyde Tolson came into Memphis on a regular basis, how he brought money in to pay people off so that they would participate, and how he caused people in King's own organization to betray him. So we had massive betrayals going on throughout the case and throughout the course of this action.
That was one of the most shocking things that I saw in looking at this material, looking at the books, and that was the people on King's own team who were part of the plot. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, he was betrayed. He was betrayed by people like Reverend Billy Kiles, Reverend Jesse Jackson. It was Jackson who, from what the eyewitnesses told us, was responsible for changing the room from 202, secluded, secure room, to 306, an exposed room up on the balcony. So he was simply betrayed. There's no question about that.
So I want to ask a little bit more personal about this. First of all, how did you become involved in this investigation? And then how have you been able to metabolize all of this stuff? I mean, you're reading about betrayals. You're looking at people. You're seeing them on the news, and they're holding forth like everything is normal. How do you – what's the internal psychology of something like that?
Well, I mean, I knew Martin only the last year of his life. He and I were very close. He asked to meet with me when I came back from Vietnam. I was a journalist in Vietnam, and I was basically the one who turned him against the war in Vietnam. So he saw my photographs of the maimed and burned children in villages and all of that, and he decided that was it. So he delivered the Riverside speech on April 4, 67. He and I then became close in the last year of his life in an effort from the National Conference on New Politics to develop what amounted to a radical organization to try to change the whole focus of American government. His opposition to the war was not the reason they killed him, in my view. They killed him, in my view, because he was going to bring 500,000 people to Washington. And they were going to petition their congressmen and senators to put money back in social programs taken away from the war, and the military was concerned, I think rightly concerned, that that group was going to be frustrated by rejections, and that might have led to a revolution happening in the nation's capital, because they were not going there to march; they were going there to camp and to be there as a force. And there was a possibility that there would be a revolution. Remember, 100 cities burned that year. Remember, there almost was a revolution in France, in Paris. And if it hadn't been for André Malraux counseling de Gaulle, there might have been a revolution in France. They were very afraid that this was going to take place in America. And so they were never going to allow Martin to leave Memphis and bring that mob to Washington. So they had to kill him.
It's an interesting story that way. You know, I lived in D.C. right around that time. I remember Resurrection City. They did, as a matter of fact, in the late spring of 1968, they did bring the Poor People's Campaign, and Reverend Abernathy was in charge of that, and we even put up some people who were visiting. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, it's similar to what happened with JFK, if you're familiar with James Douglas's book about the unspeakable, JFK and the unspeakable, why he died and why it mattered. And according to Douglas, the American military establishment was really concerned that, you know, we had a leader who was anti-military, who seemed to be taking the country in a direction of something that was going to be different. And they could have justified that based on we did it to save the country. So as you're saying that was their rationale. How does that feel?
Well, I mean, I think it's frightful, obviously, and horrific, because it totally goes contrary to democratic impulses and the use of mobilization and demonstration and nonviolent resistance. But that was the reality. That was what they were determined to do. They couldn't co-opt King. They couldn't change him. And he had such a large following. He was a threat. So they had to get rid of him.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
More people nowadays are choosing natural and organic foods. The problem is, these foods can be hard to find and expensive. Creations Clean Food offers organic, non-GMO foods at wholesale prices, delivered to your doorstep, and free shipping for orders over $50. Come visit us online and take a look. Save time, save money, save your health, save the planet at creationscleanfood.com or find us on the Wiki Politiki sponsor page.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman back here with the final segment of our interview with Bill Pepper, Martin Luther King's attorney and author of three books on the subject of his assassination, Orders to Kill, An Act of State, and The Plot to Kill King. You'll also be hearing a word from the Swami, which is kind of unusual for our regular Wiki Politiki broadcast, but the Swami will be sharing as well. So now we return to the interview with William Pepper on April 4th, 2017. Why do you figure that the people inside his campaign actually betrayed him. What was in it for them to do that, do you figure?
They were paid money.
Paid money. Yeah, the old money thing. You know, the carrot and the stick. First, we'll give you the carrot.
They were all paid.
So you've been holding, this has been your, I'm sure you've done many other things in your lifetime, but this has been a conversation that you've been holding for many years. What do you expect can come from, you know, and it may sound like a dumb question. Why are you doing it? How have you been able to keep moving forward with this in the face of the stonewalling by the media?
Well, I mean, it's just a slippery slope. I got involved and I didn't pull out. And I had to move my first family to England because of the threats, and I couldn't raise the children in that kind of environment. So they were all raised in England. And then I commuted back and forth. I just felt, frankly, that I owed it to Martin and I owed it to this republic. I'm a first-generation American, and this was something that I found so abhorrent that I had to just persist and try to do the best I could. And I think Martin's life and death deserve nothing less. So that's, I just persisted, that's all.
What do you think positive might come out of this? In other words, do you think that this will come out? And if it does, what would be the positive benefits of this, particularly at a time when people don't even understand history anymore. You know, just, you know, if it happened 2 weeks ago, huh? You know, they don't know. What do you figure could be the positive benefits of actually having the story be revealed?
Well, perhaps Americans will become more sophisticated in terms of what their government is about. America is, as Martin said, the largest purveyor of violence in the world. And the American system, the American corporate capitalist system, which is determined to dominate the resources of the planet and the wealth of the planet, leads it down these kinds of roads. And the people don't understand that. They're not educated to be aware of the reality of their government. This is an empire, and it's important that they understand. If they can tolerate it if they wish, but at least they should understand the system under which they live and the effect of this system upon the world.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important. I think the veils are, you know, the term apocalypse means the lifting of the veils originally, and the veils seem to be lifting on so many things, particularly this whole idea about the deep state, et cetera, even though there's many distortions going on. There's revelations about pedophilia in high places and in that sort of those kinds of nefarious doings. And what would how could the American public be prepared to actually turn this into something that is empowering rather than numbing?
Well, if the American people, first of all, have to understand the nature of the problem, they have to understand the core illness of the society and the values that are underlying values that really are dominating it. And once they understand that, then they have to begin to think about how the existing system of electoral politics can be used and how they can put people into positions of power who will reverse the trends that have existed going back 60 years or more, and from the Cold War period. But they can't do that unless they are aware of the illness itself, of the innate sickness of the society and its impact on the world.
It's definitely true, I'm afraid. I want to go way back to how you got to Vietnam to be able to do that article and take those photos. You were obviously, were you a journalist? Were you an attorney? How did you get there?
No, I was a I went as a journalist, but I was not representing any major news media. I went as and became accredited as a journalist, and went on borrowed money because I was very concerned about everything I heard that was going on. Everything I heard that was going on in the world, I simply had to go.
And there you have it. And you started something, and you've stayed with it. As so many people have turned the other. I've read a piece by a journalist who's been an independent journalist, and he was talking about how, when he first started his career, he had the opportunity to become, you know, to join a well-established mainstream publication. And he started to realize, I mean, you wrote your thing for Ramparts, right? And that was a rather alternative publication.
Yes.
And he recognized that if he wrote for this other publication, he would really not be able to cover these kinds of things, that he realized he would be compromising himself. And then for his salary, and then he'd have the excuse, well, I'm supporting my family. You took your family to England to protect them for the work that you were doing. When you were in the midst of doing that, did you have doubts about that? Did you go, am I crazy or something?
No, I mean, it was just something that I had to do to protect them and to allow me to continue unfettered and in the work that I had chosen to do.
I've got two more questions. One, of all of the revelations about this case, what was it that was the most, I would use the word, shocking to you?
I guess the degree of involvement of agents, senior agents of the government of the United States in setting up this assassination. The degree of detail and involvement of those agents and the extent of their involvement was revelatory. I didn't think the control went that close to the highest levels.
And you did mention J. Edgar Hoover and Tolson.
Clyde Tolson was the front man for Hoover. He was the one who came in all the time. He was the one who brought the money. He was the one who brought the instructions. He was the one who paid for the for James Earl Ray to be allowed to escape after they had profiled him as a convict who would be an ideal patsy. And I have an eyewitness who went to the prison for the delivery of the money to the warden.
Wow. After the election, I sent out a piece to the people who are on my list, and I said, it's time for deep political education. I had them watch Oliver Stone's series, The Untold History of the United States, and so on, 12-part series. So I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to say, people out there listening to this, the latest book is called The Plot to Kill King. The first one, that was an Act of State. Was that the first book?
That was the second book. The first book was Orders to Kill.
Orders to Kill, An Act of State, and The Plot to Kill King, three books that go very, very, very deeply down the rabbit hole into this deed that was done with the blessings, or I should say cursings, of our own government and governance. And I think the way that we heal this is we reveal this. One final question. What are your are you traveling around the country? Are you at this, as we approach the 50th anniversary of the assassination next year, do you have plans to continue this promo during this period of time?
Well, I mean, if people want to hear what I have to say, I'm willing to give interviews. If people want to read the book, of course, I'm very happy that they will read the book. I think we know more. And very carefully, listen to this very carefully. I think we know more actual factual details about this major assassination than any assassination in history. I think we have learned more of the actual details, the day-to-day details of how this was carried out, more than any assassination in history. And that's only because I have been able to stay with it for over 40 years and to let people come forward as they are nearing the grave and provide information, provide evidence on the basis of their conscience, finally giving them that motivation. So I think it's an extraordinary lesson if one wants to understand how such a major assassination is carried out. I think it's important to understand that. I, as you probably know, I agreed to become the lawyer for Sirhan, and I was close to Bob Kennedy as well. And I took on the Sirhan case because the evidence of his innocence was so profound and was so great also that I thought, well, I can't let this one go. So I took it on, and we have represented Sirhan now since 2007 when his last lawyer died. But nowhere have we had, in that case, the degree of detail that we've been able to develop with respect to the assassination of Martin King.
Very, very interesting. There's much, much more to talk about. There's 700 or 800 pages of detail, and as you say, it is the most detailed investigation and in corroboration of any assassination in history. I want to thank you so much, Bill Pepper, for being with us today, and also for the work that you've done for this past period of time. And I know that you were of great benefit to those people that wanted to relieve their conscience. I think that you gave them the opportunity to do that, and I thank you for serving that scene as well. So thank you, good luck, and may the story emerge, and soon.
Thank you very much. It's good to speak with people like you who are really interested in seeing the truth be revealed to the public of this country.
Well, we have a new saying called, the truth shall upset you free. So thanks again, Bill.
Indeed. Bye. Thanks very much.
Hello, this is Swami Beyondananda, political guru and uncommentator, and welcome to Karma Talk, where we talk about our collective karma and our individual karma. Well, you just heard some very, very interesting revelations. And you know, all the time people are talking about these conspiracy theories. Well, my definition of a conspiracy theory is something which, if it were true, you couldn't deal with it. I prefer the word conspiracy because we have been conned into believing a lot of things that are not true, and the pirates, these confidence men pirates, have actually stolen the Commonwealth under our eyes by keeping us divided and conquered. We have a deeply divided body politic in this country. Half the population believes our elections are broken. The other half believes that they're fixed. And so in this particular state, most people really know that they are not being told the truth. And now, of course, the veils are being lifted, and we are learning more about the deep state. It's going to be very frightening to people until you recognize that we can cultivate the deeper state of love, the deeper state of community, the deeper state of laughter and coherence, and we can metabolize all of this residuedo. Because let's face it, we have been ruled by the lowest common denominator for about 5,000 years. And we are still reeling from this, and that is why the sociopathogens have been in charge. Well, here's what we have to do. We have to actually let all of the truth come out. We have to metabolize this stuff in a field of love and laughter. And this is the question that is coming up right now. Can we undo the doo-doo that has been done, or will the done doo-doo be our undoing? So I'm hoping that you hold this with a lot of love and a lot of laughter. Till we meet again, namaste and namaste. Goodbye.
G-U-R-U, 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 G-U-R-U.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back with Byron Palitzos, William Pepper's friend and publicist, who is here to tell us about an exciting development in breaking the story through what I call the soundless barrier. Welcome, Byron.
It's good to be here, Steve.
Good. Well, today, the Washington Post actually has published a rather remarkable story this week. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's kind of a strange and almost fluky thing that this happened, because I've been sending out his new book. You know, it's The Plot to Kill King came out in paperback recently, and the hardback came out last year. It didn't get very well known, and you know, they mailed it out to all the media. Nobody did a review of it, and this thing is like an encyclopedic tome of evidence, court admissible evidence about the King assassination. So we were very discouraged, and Bill got a little bit of funding to hire me to do it with the paperback and get it out. So we sent it to the Washington Post and everybody else. And, you know, you just go through the motions and you send it to these places and you call them up and, you know, you just have to say prayers. Out of the blue, some other part of the Washington Post had heard about the book. You know, it's almost like a divine intervention, because not one newspaper or magazine, particularly progressives, none of the progressives, Amy Goodman on down, none of them, they didn't even reply, really, to me as the publicist. But here's the Washington Post. And a guy named Tom Jackman, who's a kind of a middle-level reporter for them. It's just staff reporter. And he came up to meet Bill and his from Washington. He went up to New York and spent 4 hours with Bill and went through the story in detail. And we were just shocked that anybody, that such a thing could happen, because it's been ignored for 50 years by the Washington Post and everybody else. But one of the funny things the guy said along the way was, well, we had to do this because we looked at this and figured that, you know, it's the 50th anniversary and there are going to be a lot of conspiracy theories out there. And we better sort of get a leg up on it and cover it so that the conspiracy theories don't get the upper hand.
Ha. Huh. And so they actually went and studied it and found out, maybe this one is for real.
That's what happened. So somehow he got the book, and it, you know, kind of blew his top of his head open, and, you know, he sort of had to deal with it, and they got permission to interview Bill.
Wow. And I understand that I've seen the story. They've actually framed that the beginning part is that the King family supports Bill Pepper's findings and contentions, and that seems to be the lead, right?
Yeah, they made that the lead, and I can see how the editors would force him to do that, because they are recognizable, and number two, it's understandable that the family would have, you know, a quirky theory, you know, because of their grief, so it takes a little bit of the pressure off the reader. But then so it is on the front page of the Post. But Bill's part of the interview is in the back pages.
So this happened. It's there. It's out there. It's broken through the sound barrier. I read the article, and of course they have to put in the official story is embedded in the middle. Well, yeah, we still believe it was James Earl Ray, and so on. What do you think the upshot is going to be of this? Is it just going to sit there? Is there a way to pick this up and move to other publications with it?
Yeah, as the publicist, you know, it's my job literally today to start sending that out to everybody on my list. And, I really want to get this to, for example, to Amy Goodman's producer, because, you know, it's sort of like, hey, look, you, Amy Goodman, have never covered this, not once. And you know all about it, and you know Bill. But look, you got scooped by the Washington Post.
Fake news.
So that, you know, it's they've upstaged the progressive left.
Well, that's not easy to do. If we've talked, you know, we did an interview with Mark Crispin Miller a few months ago, and that's what happened with his Fooled Again book about the elections being stolen. There really isn't an alt left like the alt right. It doesn't seem. It seems like somehow these people don't want to touch these third rail stories that have been associated with quote unquote conspiracy theories and so on. Now, I know, wasn't there going to be a movie about this? I seem to remember that there was something that this was going to be broken through a few years ago. Am I making that up?
No. That definitely is a movie. The rights were bought by a producer named Mark Gill, and he's, you know, pretty well known Hollywood producer. Originally, it was they were negotiating. Bill Pepper was negotiating with Mel Gibson.
There's a combination. we would call that combination Assault and Pepper, wouldn't we?
Oh, dear. Well, you know, Gibson was, really into this and wanted to do it. And last minute, something, it just didn't come off right. And So he had to let it go, and Mark Gill bought it, and then Gill brought in a I would say a second tier director from London, and they are raising money. They have a very strong screenplay. So it's a kind of a ready-to-go a script, and it's going to happen.
Interesting. Well, I think this may accelerate the progress. Like so many of these things, you know, we've talked about the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, all of these perpetrations where there's certainly overwhelming evidence that no matter what really did happen, the official story is bogus. How do people metabolize this? In other words, most people don't want to really recognize these things are even possible. What perhaps makes these times different? Obviously, something happened that the Washington Post decided they were going to jump in. Where do we go from here? How do we metabolize these toxic perpetrations?
Well, Steve, you asked a big question, so I'll try to give a big answer. Jeez. It's like anything else. I mean, you know, sort of like the family secrets are buried, you know, and then much later in life, you find out, you know, who did the perpetrations when you were a kid or something. You know, it just sort of has to come out because this is evolution at work, you know, and evolution means healing. And, you know, hey, 50 years later isn't really that terrible because of this was a deep, dark secret that nobody was going to get at. You had to be, you know, so devoted. You know, Bill was devoted. He had a very strong motive such that he actually left his family in the lurch because he had three kids.
Right.
And he was living in England. He had to actually flee to England. I don't know if you know this, Steve.
Yeah, he mentioned it in his interview just a little while ago. Yeah, he mentioned that.
So he was flying from London to Memphis and almost like literally, you know, hanging out at bars in Memphis for years and following leads and you know, tracking this stuff. And it took forever. I mean, it took, you know, 25 years really to get the evidence that you see in that book, but even after the trial, we didn't mention the 1999 trial, the Memphis civil suit trial that he won, and the plaintiff was Coretta King. He won that, and he submitted all his evidence and put out a book at that time. And so there's two previous books with the previous evidence, but since the last book, 2003, all these other people came out, you know, practically on their deathbed, you know, people who were accessories to the crime, you know, found tracked down Bill.
Yes.
And it's sort of like more of a personal thing for a lot of these people and for Bill. You know, once you get onto something like this, that it's like it obsesses you. So kind of the upshot of what I'm saying is, it's the natural healing process, but it takes time.
Well, as Groucho said, time wounds all heals. So I think that's exactly what's happening. And I think that given the veils being lifted on so many things nowadays, there's going to be more to come. There's something else related. I just saw that you sent me some information related to the RFK assassination. I understand that Bill Pepper also represented Sirhan Sirhan.
Yeah, it still does. And after the original lawyer died about a decade ago or more, and the guy said, look, I want to, before he died, he passed everything on to Bill, and Bill took it up. And in his usual rigorous fashion, he did a lot more research than the original lawyer, who was in certain ways personally compromised and probably had been in a blackmail situation and did not do really anything. And, you know, for example, they should have had an evidentiary hearing, a new hearing, because they had such a vast amount of new evidence, and the guy never even put a motion in to do that. So Bill did that, but he, before he did that, he, you may know the story of having this famous Harvard psychiatrist interview Sirhan in his prison cell.
No, I don't know that story.
It's a great story. It's a guy named Dr. Dan Brown. He's one of the world's authorities on hypnosis. And Bill brought this guy in from Harvard to, you know, and it took him like 4 years to, you know, get the prison warden to let this guy go in there. But anyway, he went in there and he came out and spent hours and hours with him. And he came out, and this is all in the evidentiary record, that Sirhan was still hypnotized.
Wow. That's a long lasting hypnosis, 50 years, just about. Wow.
Well, I mean, technically you can, it can be embedded in the unconscious or in some sense, and you're still susceptible to the trigger word and stuff like that in that story. And so, you know, but he concluded that, you know, that Sirhan has no memory of the event, meaning he was mind controlled during the event.
Well, this is really very interesting, Byron. We're going to have to wrap up this interview. I know we're going to be back with some more information about that. Again, once the veils start getting lifted on one thing, it makes it easier for the collective consciousness to embrace it, or encompass it, and heal it, probably through some form of truth and reconciliation. So,
I totally agree. Well put.
Thank you, Byron Belitzos, for sharing the latest news on the Bill Pepper book and books, and the Washington Post story that actually gives credence to the idea that Martin Luther King was killed by a conspiracy, including the FBI and other government agencies, and not James Earl Ray. Thanks so much, Byron, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, and my pleasure to be on your show, Steve. All the best.
So there we have it. The awful truth, and yet, once revealed, there is freedom, there's relief, there's release. The cat is out of the bag and won't ever go back in. So now what? How do we process and metabolize the toxicity in the body politic? How do we bring about the kind of change Martin Luther King stood for? So, if I may be permitted to share a dream of my own that builds on his, in my dream, the United States has its own Truth and Reconciliation Commission, just like South Africa did, to shift away from blame and punishment to forgiveness and lessons learned. You know, one of the most destructive aspects of secrecy is that it prevents us from collectively learning the lessons, so it becomes part of our human consciousness and isn't forced back undercover so it can emerge again and again. Frankly, we don't have the time. The second part of the dream has to do with the fulfillment of our nation's founders' dream, of we the people being the sovereign ruler of our republic. As the Declaration of Independence declared, there is no king ruling over us, and our rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness come from life itself. That's why I say that when we the people assume the mantle and responsibility of king, embodying the values of the great Martin Luther King we celebrate today, we'll bring about the queendom of heaven, queendom where the feminine values of kindness, care for creation, and nurturance rules, and the masculine energy is protecting the nurturer, not the predator. This is a mass awakening, a worldwide realization. We might even be, not just nationally, but worldwide, on the threshold of what I call the Eisenhower moment. Nearly 60 years ago, President Dwight Eisenhower said, quote, "I think that people want peace so much that one of these days government had better get out of their way and let them have it," unquote. Now that 7 billion of us can be connected through our personal devices, for the first time in history, we can gather and declare peace together. May we the people, gathering around the coherent heart of love, bring Martin Luther King's dream from dream time to real time. Thank you for listening to WikiPoliticky. By the way, if you want to find out more about what we're doing, if you want to become a member, if you want to become a sponsor, if you want to join the uprising, you can find us at wikipolitiki.com. That's WikiPolitiki, wikipolitiki.com. Thank you, and may the farce be with you.